You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation, and tonight's episode is Redemption. I'm Luke from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And the Klingon, Brian Dedamore, has returned.
The Klingon, Brian Dedamore.
Kapla.
Kapla, little warrior. Kapla.
Coming from a short, fat Ferengi like you, that's a compliment.
You don't talk about us like that. Anyway.
Yeah, I do. I just slap you around like a silly ragdoll.
Ragdoll. Ragdoll, living in the movie.
Hot tramp. Is it a cutie? You're so fine. I never see you leaving by the back door. Man, hot time. Get it while it's easy. I don't mind. Well, come on up and see me. Ragdoll. Baby, won't you do me like you done before? I'm feeling like a bad boy. Just like a bad boy. I'm ripping up a ragdoll. Like throwing away an old toy. Some babies talk.
So, Brian, what brings you around today?
Well, it's another Klingon event, so you bring on the best expert in the Klingon Empire.
The only expert in the Klingon Empire.
Actually, I've been quite busy. I'm busy finishing up a region, Starfleet International's Region 1 Summit, which will be June 9th through the 11th in Madison, Indiana. And I just recently became one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of an organization called Federation Ground Forces, which is part of the parent company of Star Trek Soul Sector, which is a new Star Trek organization being backed by Paramount.
Huh.
I gave you a link to their Facebook site. As soon as they send me out the official website, then I'll post it out to you and let you post it out on BattleBridge.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, I'm just trying to log in so I can see that.
They gave me the ultimate position of craziness. I'm the chief of logistics.
Oh, wow.
In other words, I got the Ferengi job.
The Federation Ground Forces. Huh. It's a closed group, so.
Yeah, it is a closed group. I'll find the open one for you. Sorry, I forgot. We have an open one and a closed one. I think I gave you the closed one.
Yeah, she's definitely closed up. Okay, well, it's good to have you on. And, of course, you'll be back next episode for Redemption Part 2.
Yeah.
All right.
But I can get you, I can grant you access if you want to join and look into it.
All right. Yeah, I just did. Okay. Sounds good to me. Well, anyway. So, we're here for Redemption. Why don't we head on in? The synopsis for tonight's episode is Picard balances his Federation and Klingon duties as new Klingon Chancellor Gowron faces a civil war. Worf and his brother Kern fight to regain their father's honor. And this is the season finale in the 26th episode of season 4. First aired on June 17th, 1991. Written by Ronald D. Moore and directed by Cliff Bull, the Bullion. Everybody calls him the Bullion. Guest stars include Robert O'Reilly as Gowron, Tony Todd as Kern, Barbara March as Lursa, Gwyneth Walsh as Bitor, Ben Slack as Katal, Nicholas Kempros as Movar, J.D. Cullum as Tyrell, son of Duras, Tom Ormeni as a Klingon first officer, nice. Special guest star Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan. It's not even on there, although I don't understand why. But we do have uncredited star. Anybody want to guess who that would be?
Hang on. So, Lou, I think you're going down the route of... okay, so are you talking about Tasha Yar at this point?
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm talking about Sela. But yeah, sure. That would be Denise Crosby. I don't know why she's not listed, but...
Well, the thing is, you don't want to list her at the front, right? There are a couple of episodes that...
that makes sense.
I think there are episodes that reveal that it's a Q episode, mainly through a pun in the title, before you see Q. And I find that to be unsatisfactory somehow. I don't want Q to be announced on the title card.
She just did a part. She did barely a cameo, if you want to call it a cameo, at the end of this.
Right.
But she'll show up on the next credit on next season's first episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And finally, Majel Barrett is a voice of the computer. So what do we think about this episode? Brian, you start as our resident Klingon.
Well, this is a good example of how Klingon politics works in its fullest and most glorious warlike manner. They just can't settle this the old-fashioned way by following the rules and the law. They all have to fight it out. That's basically what this is. And the Romulans, being Romulans as they are, they're trying their best to unhandedly sneaky get themselves set up in a position where they have the Klingon Empire and the Romulan Star Empire both back on the same page doing what they should be doing, causing the Federation trouble.
Yeah.
That's basically the whole synopsis of the show. Damn. In a nutshell.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Okay, for me, this is pretty interesting, the change in power, and I do find this episode interesting for the Prime Directive versus the next episode, where the Prime Directive be damned. And I also am so intrigued at such an honorable race that sometimes is amazingly dishonorable.
Yeah, and that's been noted in future episodes of Star Trek DS9, just if you guys want to go research it. I agree with you. This is the way this whole war stood out was very, very, to me, it was a waste of resources, a waste of talented warriors in the Empire just because of two women's vanity.
Yeah, right.
And a very bad leader's vanity. I mean, Gowron, for his faults, was a great strategic politician, but he was no leader. Okay? He just happened to get lucky that Worf made him leader. And we found that out when Worf went overboard his ship and basically put a batleth in his chest to prove his point for murdering his mate.
Yeah. That comes later. Well,
no, that came before this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Duras. You're talking about Duras, and then I'll.
Yeah, Duras. Pardon me. Duras getting a batleth chest surgery.
Wasn't the thing the batleth actually wiggling? If I remember correctly.
Yep.
Okay. All right, Doc. What about you?
Okay, I mean, I enjoy this episode. I always like this. And I'm not a kind of guy that gets hung up on this Klingons are supposed to be honorable, so why are they kind of fighting and kind of going behind each other's back? I can completely understand how that could have occurred. I have to say, though, that watching this episode, I still haven't quite worked out in my mind which one of them is Lursa and which one of them is Bator. And I think I might have to like hand in my my Trek card for that. I haven't figured out a way of remembering who's who yet.
I think Lursa is the one that looks like the Funja face, kind of like.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay. The one that does most of the political speaking is Lursa, and the one that's the flirt is the other one.
Bator. Yes, Lursa is the one who talks. We did indeed find that he had a son and heir. That's why I call her the Funja face. I don't know. She always has this scowl look on her face.
If she would have been male, she would have had Dear Ross killed, and she would be leading the High Council right now. She'd had Duros killed and had Gowron killed.
Huh.
She's that sneaky.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe even killed T'Rall too.
Yeah, she would have gotten rid of every male heir to the Duros family if she had been male. By the way, for the record, the reason why the Duros older sister could not take a seat on the High Council, after Gowron's daughter was assassinated, the High Council went in and made it a rule that no woman can ever be Chancellor of the High Council.
Okay.
Ever again.
I think in what you just said was so inaccurate, it's amazing. No, I think you're talking about the previous chancellor, Gorkon.
Gorkon is who you're referring
from Undiscovered
to.
Country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
His daughter raised to become chancellor after his death.
Yeah.
But several years after, after she took office, she was also assassinated. According to canon, according to the Star Trek.
Really? Canon. Okay.
Yeah. So when she passed away, the High Council made a law that no woman could ever sit in the chancellorship of the Klingon Empire. It is strictly a male-only position.
Okay.
That's why she needed T'Rell alive to make the challenge to Dear Ross. Because most people would say, well, she's got the political power. Why doesn't she just run for the chancellor? That's the reason why you won't see another female chancellor in the Klingon Empire. Huh. Is because they made sure that it would never happen again.
Wow. Okay. Okay, so, Doc, were you finished with your opening?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're en route to the planet. We're en route to the Klingon homeworld to take part in the installation ceremony of Gowron, who Worf helped to lead the council by killing his only opponent. Our non-interference policy would normally preclude us from being part of this, but what the hell. While we're there, it will provide a chance for someone to correct an injustice. And in this episode, Picard even says, you know, your discommodation is a facade to protect less honorable men. It's a lie, and lies must be challenged. Oh, but Mr. Worf, I must recall you to duty.
Yeah, that's what I couldn't figure out. He got a written reprimand in his record for going over there and killing Dear Ross. But in the same sense, Picard had to bite his tongue on doing it because he realized that it's Klingon tradition gave Worf the right to do that. And yeah, he basically installed Gowron as Chancellor of the Klingon Empire by killing off Dear Ross. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember, the sisters are sitting in the background just waiting, and they threw their card out on the table the minute Gowron became Chancellor by throwing T'Rell into this mix and having him challenge Gowron.
Right.
So that's, and there's why I explain why didn't Lursa take the reign and try to become chancellor. That's the reason why she couldn't, is because the Klingons had passed the law saying that no woman could actually be the chancellor of the Klingon Empire. In fact, they made it to the point that a woman, it's very hard for a woman to be sitting on the High Council. That's just how much they despise women being in the power position roles of the Klingon Empire.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like Picard is very wishy-washy in this. You know, you must face this. It's a lie. We're not going to get involved. Worf, you must come back to duty. And then, in the next episode, in the conclusion, not only does the Federation get involved, they get involved deep. 26 starships deep.
They did not get involved in the war, in the struggle for who's in charge of the Klingon Empire. All they did was, with the permission of the Chancellor, go into their border and set up a blockade on the Romulan side of the Empire to keep supplies coming in for the Deiros family. They did not get involved in the war between the two people running for Chancellor of the Klingon Empire.
But wouldn't the blockade still violate the non-interference in any way? Or
no, it's what they should have done in the first place. And Picard did the only thing he could do. Instead of actually sending Federation ships to help Gowron defend his borders, he did the only thing he could do. He got Gowron to give him permission to bring a blockade of ships across to keep the Romulans from coming through the border of the Klingon Empire to restock his enemies. Because in a sense, Terrell was actually cheating on his challenge because he had Romulan support.
Right. And nobody knows that.
All Picard did was balance the scales the only way he had to. He had no other option to balance the scales but to go in and put a blockade on the Klingon side of the border with the Romulan Star Empire, and basically stop supplies from coming in.
Yeah. Never rely on the Romulans. No, they'll. Okay, so the Klingon ship Bortas is there to escort the Enterprise, and while they're heading there, we must talk about preventing a Klingon civil war. So, I kind of agree with Picard that, hey, nothing to do with us. You're on your own there. What about you guys?
I agree. The Prime Directive made it perfectly clear we can't get involved in a Klingon civil war. That's a matter between the Klingons.
Yep.
And if you would have dragged the Federation in, you would have dragged the Romulan Empire in. And then the Romulans would have got what they wanted.
Right.
A war,
yeah,
between the three strongest powers in the Alpha Beta Quadrant. Okay, Picard realized this and made sure that he didn't get involved in this as much as he could. It's bad enough. I'm surprised he even agreed with Kempec to even be the arbiter of succession, but he did, and that to me was a good example of interference in another culture's change of leadership.
So do you think anybody in the Federation should have done it, or maybe not such a high-ranking official?
No one in the Federation should have done it. The closest one in the Federation that should have done it was the one that couldn't do it, Worf.
Ah. Okay. Okay. So, Doc, your thoughts on the Prime Directive in this case?
Now, personally, I personally think it's pretty clear. I think that they shouldn't get involved, but at the same time, right? I mean, I always consider this to be like the Federation is its own country, and the Klingon Empire, they're their own country. And, you know, if the president of another country asked us to kind of like arbitrate or oversee certain things in a diplomatic sense, we would do so. And that's what I think Picard was doing, being the arbiter of succession. But at the same time, when, you know, things descend, you don't take sides in a civil war.
Right.
However, you might then, you know, you might, with permission, go over to their borders and make sure that no one else is taking sides in the civil war. And that, you know, that happened during the Cold War, of course. where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily fight against the enemy, but you would make sure that the enemy wouldn't be able to be supplying weapons or whatever to, you know, to a side during a during which you would have a you would want a particular outcome. So you'll stand back, but not too far back.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally don't. I in my mind I kind of see this quite clearly as being reasonable.
Okay, but I kind of, in a small way, I agree with Tyrell. In a way of, you know, are we going to allow the Federation dictate who becomes our next leader? I don't know. Maybe they should have gotten a PacLed to do it, or
no, Kampek was very specific on why he wanted Picard to do this. Okay. He knew there was somebody that was trying to change the leadership in the High Council, because up until Kempak was poisoned, he was pretty much a vibrant, living, breathing, strong Klingon. Okay, he could have ruled for another 20, 30 years easily. Okay, because he had that kind of political clout to do it. Okay, the problem was Diras was so quick to want to be chancellor, he basically poisoned Kampak to force the change of leadership, because he could do only so much as just a member of the council. So I can see where Diras did what he did to get where he wanted to, but at the same time, he picked Picard because he knew Picard would be an honest judge of the situation. And he was. But I agree, he should have never, because it come back and bite him in the butt later on when Tyrell made his challenge to Gowron that we're going to let the Federation dictate who leads the Klingon Empire. That should have been decided by Klingons. And that's why I say Picard should have never done what he did in the first place. But he did. Can't do nothing about it. We have to learn to work with the problem we've got at hand.
Okay. So, dumbasses, I'm sorry, I mean durasses, sisters, Lursa and Betur, who, according to Memory Alpha, are not wearing stunt chests. Those puppies are real. They're trying to seize control of the council in some unknown way. What was the whole purpose of Tyrell? I mean, I think Gowron would have wiped the floor up with his blood very easily.
Well, keep in mind, even though Lursa is not male, she still has a whole lot of political clout among the council.
Yeah.
So by bringing Tyrell in and making his challenge to the High Council, she basically, in a sense, is the puppet behind the she's the puppet master behind Jor-El, the puppet.
Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't until he got older and got discommodated out of the Klingon Empire did he finally grow up and be a man and become strong. But this challenge kind of made him open his eyes when he lost it. Because you'll find out later on, like Star Trek, the Star Trek games and Star Trek Online and the books, Tyrell will actually get to a point where he can actually challenge one of the Klingon leaders for control of the High Council again, despite his dishonorable, what happened to his family, the dishonorable tactics of his family.
Wow. Okay.
One of them is to get the Sword of Kaelas.
Oh, that's right. I remember that now. But, of course, you know, he ends up behind a force field for all eternity. No, he gets out, doesn't he?
Yeah, he gets out.
Okay. So, a Worf is escorting Gowron to the transporter, and, oh, while we're there, we need to talk. You know, my daddy didn't do anything wrong. It was Duras' daddy, and the council knew. Did Gowron really not know? The council knew? Oh.
No, that was kept strictly within the council. Remember when What's-Her-Face was looking through the council records, and she looked at the records and found out they were sealed by Diros.
Right.
Okay, and she had to go around about way to find the same answer she could have gotten directly, and that's what caused Diros to come in and kill her. The same basic principle. It wasn't known to the Klingon Empire that it was actually Diros' father who gave up the security codes to Khitomer.
Yeah.
It was actually, but they only knew that Worf's dad did. So nobody in the Empire, other than the immediate council of Kempak, knew this whole situation because they were sealed to a point where the only person that could open it up was the Chancellor himself or Diros himself.
Oh, see, I always thought Gowron was actually a member of the council. He just wasn't.
No, he wasn't. No, he was a military. He was a high-ranking general.
Oh.
High-ranking military. The only reason why he actually got requests, the only reason why he was nominated for a position is because of his family lineage. His family line is the only reason why him and Diros were chosen in the first place.
Mm.
They were part of the old Klingon house line.
Okay. All right. So he wasn't on the council ever.
No. If Worf hadn't have been discommodated, Worf could have put in for the chancellor because he also was a member of the... He's also... His house line is one of the first house lines of the Klingon Empire.
Hmm. Okay.
Now, later on down the line, when Mortar takes over as leader of the High Council... That's when his family finally becomes frontline house. But before that, his house was considered a minor house and was never eligible to even sit on the council, much less be leader of the High Council.
Hmm. Okay.
Something you need to know about house lines. House lines are based on the original families who were tied together during the first Klingon War when Kalas and... What's-His-Face did the major fight over leadership of the Klingon Empire back in the earliest days of the Empire. Those houses that supported Kalas became the line houses that we know of today. People like Kang, Kor, and Koloff all were members of the great houses of the Klingon Empire, the ones that could rule.
Wow. Fascinating. This is why having you on is just, you just got all this down, man. This is too cool.
Well, it helps to have someone within the Klingon Language Institute and CAG that has infinite knowledge of that, and I have one of the biggest reference libraries of Klingon history in a binder that's about 5 or 6 inches thick.
Wow.
Of Klingon history and stuff like that that I've gathered over the years.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay. So Worf needs to decompress because Gowron refused to give him back his family name yet. And how can he do that? By shooting phasers. I'm shocked. And I think I have to think, maybe you guys might agree or not, but the only reason he went down to the phaser range to shoot phasers is because Guinan wasn't going to go kill Baltic warriors with him. Do you agree on that? Because I can't see Worf just going in and... I see him with the Batless trying to kill something in ferocious battle.
I think he did it because he wanted to semi-meditate, not so much to kill.
Mm. Oh, so... That relaxes him.
Yeah. You gotta think the man, you gotta look at the mindset of a Klingon warrior, okay?
Yeah.
Where we might use yoga or TV or Tai Chi to relax. For them, some form of combat, whether it's fighting monsters in a holodeck, shooting phasers in a target range, or climbing an impossible mountain. To them, that's relaxing because they're battle-oriented. Their philosophy is combat, even if it's just sparring with somebody. Okay, for them, it's relaxing.
Yeah.
So that's a way of relaxing and mating.
Hmm. Okay. But she comes in with her old wise sage advice, you know. But to do that, she has to talk about the little guy, you know, how's he adjusting to human life. Oh, well, someday he's going to want to know what it feels like to be a Klingon. Just kind of like you're finding out now. And walks out the door. Do you think Guinan was pretty good this episode? I mean, I guess, was it Guinan or could have been Troy?
I think either one would have done it.
Yeah.
And I think in absence of this being Troy, I don't think Troy has anything to do with this episode, right?
No, she doesn't.
I mean, she's very kind of conspicuous. She's on the bridge a little, and I know she comes in the following episode, but not really much going on.
No. No. Okay. So after his shooting range fun with Guinan, Worf decides to take a leave of absence to meet with his brother Kern, who isn't his brother, but really is his brother. Well, you know, it's an honor thing. You wouldn't understand. Kern tries... Why is it that Kern wants to kill Gowron himself?
Well, for the dishonor of his family, plus he has the forces to actually challenge Gowron himself, actually.
Yeah, but Gowron had nothing to do with the dishonor of his family.
It falls back to what I told you before. Gowron is an incompetent leader.
Oh, I see.
The only reason why he was even chosen was his house lineage and what few military victories he had. That's the only reason why he was even chosen in the first place. As a leader, he's politically savvy, but not militaristically smart. In fact, he's an imbecile as a combat leader. But he's one of them that could politically get what he wants done. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So why Kern is more of a military strategist. He's not as politically savvy as Gowron is, but he was savvy enough to put, seven or nine squadrons and hold some very key sectors, supply sectors, which was enough to give Gowron a fighting chance, because before he didn't even hardly have the forces to even fight a battle with the, Diros's at all, because he didn't have that political clout yet that he got after this war that Kern gave him, basically.
Yeah.
Because at this point, the military split up between probably four different forces. Kern, Gowron, Diros, and probably some other outside person entity.
Yeah.
Like it was when, right before Chancellor Gorkon took over. There was a civil war, and the only way he could win it was to get Christopher Plummer's character, I can't think of it off the top of my head, to get Gowron to actually come into the fight, because at this point, Gorkon hadn't got into the fight. And when he got into the fight, that's when we had Gorkon become chancellor.
Chang,
thank you.
It's General Chang. I was going to jump in, but
all right.
I couldn't think of his name right off the top of my head. Basically the same situation. We got a civil war with many factions trying to barter for power, and Worf forced Kern into doing something he didn't want to do. That was team up with Gowron. Okay. Duras's thought was let them fight, and then when they're done beating each other silly, I'm going to come in with my group and I'm going to kill Terrell and I'm going to become Chancellor of the Klingon Empire. That was what Kern's thought was.
Right. All right. And of course, the installation ceremony goes off without a hitch. Well, yeah, I mean, except for one nagging little thing. The fourth grade son of Duras wants to challenge Gowron. Oh, happy day, sings Picard. Now he actually considered letting the little grunt compete for the council. Okay, I'm wrong there, because Toral was played by a 25-year-old, but my goodness, I'd swear that boy was in junior high. and it turns out he's actually 3 years older than me, so it's a little strange. But, yeah.
So next time you run into each other, he's going to kick your butt, Lou.
Yes, yeah, right. I will challenge you. So, I mean, obviously, he's a little boy. And
hey, Lou. Don't forget to put your Ferengi ears and your headpiece on. You go see. If you're going to embarrass yourself, at least do it right.
Yeah. So.
I have to say, I actually quite like this dude, to be honest.
Toral?
Clearly he's a ridiculous character that is completely a fish out of water. I love the way that the females in his life, whether it's Lursun Bator, whether it's Sila, you know, in the following episode, are so dismissive of him and are using him as a pawn, and he almost doesn't seem to realize it. And he actually is he appears to be full of testosterone driving forward, and the wiser women there are like shouting him down and really treating him like a baby as he is. I kind of, it made me smile and chuckle inside.
Oh yeah.
Lursa was the puppet master behind the puppet, and Terrell was the puppet.
I like the whole,
where did you find him, Lursa? In a harlot's bedchamber?
I don't even know what a harlot's bedchamber is, but
that's a Romulan.
Maybe Duras had a hooker one night, got her pregnant, and that's where he comes from.
That's exactly what Gowron said.
Yeah, probably it. All right. And, of course, you would be completely shocked to find out that the Duras family is once again, or probably still, in bed with the Romulans.
Well, does that surprise you, Annie?
Oh, it's amazing that nobody knows it. Not only that, there are Romulans on this planet in their house. And nobody still figures it out.
And also, that dress does Romulans, right? They're not even concealing that they're Romulans.
Yeah.
I would have thought at least put a wig on or something or get out of the boots. But no, they're just hanging around as Romulans.
Yeah. Including the still, in the shadows, female Romulan.
And I mentioned it last time, in canon, there's no reason for her to be in shadow. And you think someone's going to ask, so, hey, Sila, what are you doing standing under the only dark spot in the room? Come closer. We can't see
you. But you know what's funny?
Commander,
you know what's so funny? Remember when I said that Lursa was puppet mastering the puppet from behind?
Oh, yeah.
Lursa was also the other puppet, because Sila was puppet mastering both of them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, let's see. Oh, and like I say, Worf is taking his leave of absence, but he's still pimping Data for information on the Kittimer massacre to prove that Duras's daddy was the bad guy. So,
actually, I have to say, I found it funny when Worf decided to take the leave of absence, and I had a flashback to, not a flashback, but I thought, maybe I should go into work tomorrow and do that with my boss and say, hey boss, can I take a leave of absence? And then he'll look at me and go, and he'll be all very serious and say, yeah, permission granted. And then I'll head out on my mission to, reclaim my family's name and to kick some Klingon butt.
Yeah.
And then hang around the office and use the photocopier and other stuff because, I don't have my own resources at home.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
That would be like me going into work, telling John that I'm taking a leave of absence and taking my work computer home with me to pull up file information on a case that I'm working on. It's just not going to happen.
Well, yeah. But in this, I'd say more of taking your work computer home to build a case on somebody else.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen.
No.
Federal government would come down on me so hard. It'd be fun.
Ew.
I mean, I'm not even allowed to use my work email to, like, you know, order stuff from Amazon and stuff. Uh-uh. I mean, that's a complete no-no. So how in the 24th century Worf thinks it's okay to not only just use the Enterprise, but he's also using data, right? He's thinking, yeah, this data, he's pretty good at organizing all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I'll ask him. I'll get him to do the work for me.
Right.
And also, he's still in uniform as well, which is a bit weird. It's a bit, you know, if you're going to leave, you should leave. But he keeps popping up in uniform.
Does he ever, do you think he ever takes it off?
Yep, he did once.
Yeah?
Yep. Oh. When he went to Borealis to the monks, he took it off then.
Oh.
I mean, he's also out of uniform in this episode, though, as well. Right? Right at the end, of course.
Well, yeah, I guess.
He stayed in uniform so he could get around the ship and get information he needed to clear his name.
Well, the only time he got out of the uniform was when he was recalled to duty and refused and, you know, quit. You know, stomped off. Well, I quit. Throw that badge down.
And that also just reminds me that, you know, after I've taken like a 4-hour lunch break to, you know, do stuff, my boss tells me, hey, Jim, do you mind getting back to work? Nah, I quit, boss.
I quit.
Yeah. I'm leaving now.
Yeah.
But don't worry, I'll come back. You gotta remember, and I like this because only the military people would understand this. Okay, enlisted go through contracts. When they re-enlist, they get a contract for X amount of years of service. An officer doesn't get a contract. When they say, yes, sir, I'm part of your military, they're on 24/7 until they resign. They have to actually physically resign to quit the military. If not, they're on their military until they resign.
Huh.
And it's the same thing in the Federation after all these centuries.
But would he have a notice period? And would he have to give...
Nope.
Picard 2 months notice or something?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Any officer in the military can walk in at any time and resign their commission.
Yes, but how many times have we seen, I cannot take your resignation at this time?
Very rarely. Because it's a right for an officer to resign his post.
You would think.
At any time.
Lou, you mean in Star Trek, right?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, in Star Trek, they do it all the time.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think of some examples here, but it's escaping me right now.
I mean, I think even Sisko resigns and Picard kind of says he can't accept it yet until the mission's over, and then at the end Sisko kind of withdraws his resignation in Emissary.
No, I think he said, you know, maybe you ought to consider getting somebody else for this, and Picard did send that up the chain, or was going to but didn't. And he said, have you found somebody to replace me? No? Well, then I'd like to stay. I think that was it.
Okay, I think your one sounds more plausible.
Thank you. But anyway, Picard decides, no. First, Picard says, we're not going to be using our computers for you to affect political change on your planet. But then he says, again, wishy-washy. Yeah, okay, go ahead. We'll make it available to you, to Duras, to Gowron, to Tyrell, to anybody who wants it. Anyone. I haven't seen him yet. I want to get the official record of the Kittimer Massacre. But, okay, so anyway, let's go on to Lursa and Betur. They meet with Picard, offer him a little food, a little drink, a little sex. You know, whatever it takes to allow Tyrell the chance to lead the council. And it's a pretty interesting pitch. I mean, it goes from, you know, I'll go down on you right now if you let Tyrell lead the council to, and if you don't, you'll end up having a fight with us that you may not win.
I didn't think the form was on the table.
Are you kidding? Perfect. She was right down on his knees. It would have been very close. But the point is still, it's amazing. And I loved it, the way he shot out with, boy, you know, you have manipulated these circumstances with the skill of a Romulan. Adios. Well, he doesn't say adios.
No,
I would have bitch slapped her and married her on the spot. Then take over the house.
Bite her on the cheek and walk out the door.
No.
Leave her wanting more.
I would have beat her silly, had sex with her, and declare myself her mate. And I would have took over a house at Duras and killed both of them.
Mm. Picard.
Actually, so could Worf technically marry into the Duras household?
Yes, he can.
So what? That seems like a big plot hole. Why doesn't he just do that? I mean, everyone's happy then, right?
Well, the house wouldn't have been happy, but they would have found a way to eventually assassinate him.
Yeah, right. All right.
That's why you never see marriages of, well, you do occasionally see marriages of convenience, but not often.
Hmm. All right, so in the end, it doesn't work. No food, no sex, no bite on the cheek. T'Rall cannot lead the council because he's had no battles, he's shed no blood for his people, and so the Gowron will be the new godfather.
Now, do you understand why T'Rall even made the challenge in the first place?
Yes, I think I do. Doc, do you?
Well, I thought it was just his right to do so, and he was just like, causing
it's
trouble.
Because the son inherits the battles, victories, and whatever of the father before him. So basically, if say a good example, I had a son and I died, and he went in to challenge himself for position in the High Council, he could use my title as the Harmaster and basically put himself on the council and be a challenger to the High Council because of that, because of my victories. That's how come T'Rell was able to make the challenge, because he's the direct heir to Duras. He gets the benefits of the victories and defeats of his father. And that's what he based his challenge on. But Picard realized that, yeah, you are Duras' son, and yeah, you do have the right to claim your father's victories and defeats, but you've not shed no blood for the Empire. You've not led no man. You're a child. You do not have the right to use your father's credentials to basically be leader of the High Council.
Oh, see, I didn't think of that. I was thinking more like T'Rall knew he had no right to the leadership of the council. He knew he was going to get shot down, and the only reason he did it just so he can get out that garb about, does the Federation rule us? I think he just wanted to upset the apple cart.
And he did, but if normally the only way you can challenge for the leadership of the High Council is based on your military record.
Yeah.
Or your victories, what you've done in the Empire. Okay? But you also get the honors and dishonors of your family, or in this case, your father in this case. So his whole challenge was the fact that I'm Duras's father. I have all the same things that Duras has. The problem was Picard saw right through it and said, yes, you do, but you've not shed no blood. You've not led no men. You have not won no battles in your name.
Right.
And I disclaim your right because you've not earned the right to be challenging for the council. See what I'm saying?
Right.
Wouldn't it have been just a lot easier for Picard to allow him to challenge? Because what would have happened if he had challenged? Would he have just been like killed on the spot instantly? Because he's
he would have to probably challenge by combat.
Yeah.
In which case, Duras would have amputated his head from his shoulders.
That seems like the more straightforward way to proceed, because what you get into otherwise, right, is that Picard has to make the judgment that he's not worthy, and as soon as he's into that, then they start saying, oh, you're interfering, blah, blah, blah.
This is why the Duras sisters tried to bribe Picard. Okay? Is because they want Picard to actually make that decision instead of having them to have to make T'Rell stand up and say, well, I challenge you for leadership of the High Council and create a civil war. they were hoping to bribe Picard into making the decision, and then they would slowly execute Gowron behind the scenes afterwards. See what I'm saying? So that's why when Picard said Gowron is the legit leader, Terrell said, are we going to let the Federation dictate who leads us? That's where that all come from. Now you understand?
Yep. I do. Everybody got that?
That's why you had me on the show.
Yeah, of course. We needed you. All right.
You need a Klingon political expert.
Yeah, I suppose so. All right, so the new Klingon Civil War begins when the Bortas is attacked by the Duras. And the Enterprise leaves the area. Sorry, not our fight.
Yep, that's exact. And Picard did the right thing. He left Worf on the ship because there was no way of getting him back on board the ship. He raised his shields and warped out of the area. And they let the Klingon Empire decide their fate by combat.
Okay.
Duras sent two ships in to try to kill the Bortas, caught them off guard with their pants down, literally, and almost killed him off. But Worf got smart, and Kern finally listened to his brother and came in and saved him.
Yep, because the enemy ship was within 15,000 kelicams. What's a kelicam?
It's usually a measurement distance the same as a kilometer.
Okay, there we go. Kelicam. And Worf destroys one warbird, but then, like you said, Kern saves the day. So now it's time to throw a party at the Great Hall, with Gowron being installed as Chancellor.
Now you notice how many people were in the chamber when Gowron was put in the Chancellor.
No. I didn't. There was, looking.
There was hardly anybody in the council chamber. Right. All the council members had walked out of the chamber because they were backing Duras.
Right.
They were backing Terrell.
Idiots. That's right. Now remember that. All right, so the first order of duty, first order of business as Chancellor Gowron was to give Worf his honor back.
Now, do you know why he finally gave his honor back to Worf?
He fought with him. And Kern fought for him.
Kern had come and rescued Gowron. Mm-hmm. And that showed him that maybe what Worf was saying is the truth. Worf has pledged these ships now to my cause. It's the least I can do is restore his honor back to him.
Right. Yeah. So his name may once again be spoke out loud. All right. So do you think Kern should suffer any consequence of hiding his true identity?
Nope, because the High Council made it that way. The High Council purposely hid his identity with Duras's approval to purposely keep him safe. That was the whole reason why Worf accepted the discommodation in the first place, was to keep Kern's honor in check, because they knew one day they would have to use Kern's honor in order to fix Worf's honor.
Right.
Okay.
Fascinating. Okay, cool. Let's see, what do we got left? Oh yeah, one last thing is Gowron has to ask for Federation assistance, which Picard says not gonna happen. Not gonna happen, sorry.
Here's the bird, the wonderful bird. Hey, everybody's talking about the bird.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Sorry, Mr. Worf, but not only can I not do that, you need to come back to work. Oh, what? You resign your commission? To drop kicks that comm badge and walks out. And
no, he gently lays it down on the desk.
Yeah, I know.
He was respectful to his commanding officer.
Yeah, he didn't shove it in Picard's forehead. You know, I resign.
Well, he did the only thing. Picard did the only thing he could do in this situation. He's now, this is a Klingon Civil War. Worf is a Federation officer. we're leaving the Klingon Empire. I need you back on duty. Okay? And Worf basically used his power to resign, and he resigned his position on board the Enterprise.
Yep.
I was happy the way they sent him off, though.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was a sign of respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only time I ever see that I recall is for Neelix.
I think you're right.
I don't remember seeing that any other time.
They all just wanted to make sure he left.
They were there. No, Worf had a lot of friends.
No, Neelix. For Worf, sure, but for
Neelix. Yeah, Neelix probably was escorted out just because they wanted to make sure he was leaving.
Yeah, no more Pika Line or whatever, Leola Root.
Now, the episode kind of plays, or gives the indications very strongly, right, that Worf is going to be leaving. He's transitioning over to this story. I wonder, to what extent did Michael Dorn actually, was he considering leaving, or were they not sure about whether he would be coming back? Because they seem to play it very, very strongly that he may not be coming back. There are a number of occasions where people disappear, even over the cliffhangers, and they don't have this kind of send-off. And I was just wondering whether there was anything on the real-world side that may have made this more permanent.
There was a lot of chatter back in them days. In the early days of that, when all you had was I can't think the type of chat rooms.
Forums.
They were online chat forums and group chats.
The Usenet.
It was all you could do is
bulletin
basically
boards.
Yeah,
I think
there was a lot of bulletin boards that were talking about this after whether or not Worf was coming back and everything. But I was glad he did come back because he actually made the show more interesting and it helped make DS9 even stronger as a show down the line.
Yeah. 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 Some of his fights with Odo were pretty cool. Yeah.
His interaction with the Klingons,
yes,
when they finally stationed on the base. Also, you can see Worf's leadership ability and Worf's tactical ability over and above everything else.
Yeah.
When he was stationed on DS9, he helped make the base stronger and he helped make the Klingon Empire even stronger.
Right. Okay, so he has a send off. He's now final. He's now gone. So it's time for our final thoughts and ratings. Oh, wait a minute. We forgot the mystery Romulan finally comes out of the shadows. And it's Tasha Yar.
I can tell you what I was going like. What the? Uh-huh. I won't mention the third word, but you get the hint.
Did we at all know or think it was her based on the voice?
Not me. Not when I watched it for the first time.
Yeah, go ahead, Doc.
No, and I think this is maybe something that is spoiled these days. You don't realize that almost anyone getting into Star Trek will probably be aware that she comes back in this capacity. And I remember watching this season of TNG live and actually not having really watched a huge amount of season one and thinking, what? How's this work? What's happening here? And it was a big, big, big surprise.
Right. Right. Yeah, because I don't recall. I don't really recall, to be honest. But yeah, I remember at this point I was watching them live. I also was recording them on a VHS and onto a cassette tape. That's another story. So, okay. But it looks like Tasha Yar. And humans have a way of showing up when you least expect them. Definitely.
God, don't you know that one?
Yeah. And I also don't recall this question either. But did yesterday's Enterprise pop in your head for any reason?
No, not until she explained how she became who she is. That's where I said, yeah, yesterday's Enterprise, that would explain why Tasha Yar is a half-Romulan.
Yeah.
Okay, and I had not seen yesterday's Enterprise when I watched both this episode and also Unification.
Oh,
so okay. I almost saw the beginning of the story last.
Mm. Okay, that makes sense. To me, I thought they cloned her. Somehow, some way, for some reason, they cloned her.
Like they did Picard?
Like they did Picard? What?
Like they did Picard?
Who cloned?
Nemesis?
Oh, that... But that wasn't real, was it? That wasn't a real clone of his, was it?
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, it was his... That was the clone.
Well, nobody likes Nemesis anyway, so we let that go. Okay. So, do you guys have anything to add to this?
This was a good Klingon episode. You got to see the Klingon Empire for its true colors in this. The true political colors of the Klingon Empire. And it wasn't pretty for nobody.
Uh-oh, no. Okay, so then I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. I'd say the end was a 5. Tasha coming out of the shadows. That was pretty fun. It was actually interesting. And as I said in the beginning, I'm amazed at how this honorable race could be so dishonorable. All for the good of the Empire. It's almost like DS9 and how all these really bad political people do their things in the name of the prophets. You know, the prophets smile down. The prophets walk with you. The prophets want me to be in power. The prophets want me to have this knife in your back. Yeah. So anyway. Zealous. Yeah. But, you know, there's a saying about strange bedfellows, so whatever. How are the Romulans able to be on, well, I want to call it Kronos, but I don't think Kronos was named at this point, was it?
Yep.
Oh, because of the movie. Right. Right. Okay. So how can they be on Kronos? Worf.
Just transport down.
Yeah, I guess, but no.
Hang on. When was Kronos named? Wasn't it named in
Undiscovered Country?
Maybe. That's still in the future.
Kronos, if you understand the city structure of Kronos, every major house has their own house facilities near the central part of the Klingon city. So the great houses actually go around in circles around the great hall of the Klingon Empire. So each of those compounds are guarded by the house members themselves. Okay? The house of Duras doesn't know what the house of Mog is doing, so forth and so on. When I wrote up my personal timeline, the house, Maj Beak's house, was also part of the ruling houses because we were the people who guarded Kronos. So we actually had a house in the inner circle. Remember, because if you watch the next one, Kronos is neutral territory. Okay, someone had to keep the peace during that time. So when I wrote up my personal timeline, my house was the forces guarding Kronos during the Civil War, because we were neutral in the Civil War. We didn't back Duras, we didn't back Gowron. We didn't back Kern because our job was to protect the homeworld of the Klingon Empire. So we were neutral.
Oh, weird. I thought Kronos was the actual name of the planet that the Klingons live on.
It is. But Kronos is also recognized as the Great Hall, too.
Oh, okay.
Kronos is the world, but the Kronos also represents the main city, too.
Oh, okay. Oh, fascinating. All right. Must be a lot of Calicams from the nearest Family Fun Center. Okay, so Worf regains his family name, and Gowron, who gives him his name, is named Chancellor, at least until someone he was kind to once kills him later in life. But we'll leave that for lower pylon too. Klingon politics is a very interesting and deadly game, but it's fun to maneuver through.
You got to be savvy, you got to be willing to be patient, and you have to be willing to be underhanded at the right time.
That's right.
Everything that's dishonorable in the Klingon Empire, you got to be able to do.
Okay. Whenever I see the Klingon homeworld, I can't help but wonder who are the Klingon architects. The barbers, the landscape guys, house painters, janitors, and so on. Not everyone can be a warrior. There has to be the guys who clean up the bathrooms at night. Don't know. I'd love to see those.
Answer that question. The Klingon run on what they call a caste system.
Yeah, you mentioned it's that before.
They run basically like farmers are their own caste. They're the doctors on their own caste. Judges are on their own caste. The warrior class is the head. And then based on the need of the Empire, that's how they trickle down to who's more important and who's least important.
Yeah. The janitor, the Klingon janitor. So anyway.
It could be like House Moj Beak's in charge of Kronos. Their people would be in charge of cleaning, maintaining, and keeping Kronos up and running.
Okay.
And defending it.
All right.
As an example.
Okay, so anyway, this is a pretty good story about the rise to power and all of its facets. And I'd say this is pretty close to pretty damn good. I think in the end, it's about a 4, maybe a 4.5. The reveal is a 5. I like the Romulan Shadow Girl finally comes out. She gets a 5. But in the end, I think Redemption probably to me is about a 4. So, Brian, how about you?
Well, I kind of agree with you because until you understand the Klingon philosophy, most people are kind of looking at this as, what? Klingons are dishonorable? Because the episodes before that shown honorable Klingons doing dishonorable things for the reason of their honor. Here you got to see the bad guys be the bad guys. And a lot of people couldn't believe that Klingon could be this dishonorable.
Oh, yeah.
So I got rated as a 4.5, actually. It was a very good look at the Klingon Empire as a whole. And Redemption 2 will be an even better look at it. But this one is definitely a 4.5.
4.5. 4.5. Let's see. So I was off by a 0.5 on his. What about you, Doc?
Well, I think I kind of have to echo a lot of the sentiments so far. I'll give it 4 out of 5 because I don't do half points. I think it's kind of like a really, very solid, very strong story. There are various quirks that I think we've had a bit of fun about. But overall, I kind of like it. And I particularly do enjoy the reveal. It's upsetting that you can't be shocked more than once, but hey, that's how it goes. But yeah, I really like it. I think it's a good cliffhanger. I've actually just realized that in the last episode of the season, we have been teased this season with kind of Worf disappearing, the season before with Picard disappearing when he was abducted by the Borg. And I think you can even stretch it to the end of season 2 with Riker dying during Shades of Grey. So they certainly know how to like ramp up the tension at the season's close. So all good from me.
Yeah, even season 1 had people from the past joining us.
That was stupid. That was irrelevant.
I gave it.
It continues into season 5 though because Data disappears in season 5, right?
Yes.
And then again in season 6. So you question Data's longevity. In Time's Arrow and Descent.
Yep. Okay, so I got yours right. And of course I got mine right. Brian, I missed by 0.5. So here we are at the end of season 4. 26 episodes, and we did it, James.
Eventually.
Well, yeah, but we're here. The end of the season, we did it. We had a guest or two on for every single episode this entire run, this entire season. I sucked that there, other Trekmate podcasters. No one's ever done that. We're the only ones. The only ones, boy. The only
hang on,
ones.
Hang on.
And you still hold the record for the longest podcast show, too, Lou.
Yeah, at least on the network. I think you and I preclude the network or predate the network, don't we?
Yeah, we predate the network and we predate most of the podcasts that have been out there.
Yeah, except for Treks and Sci-Fi. Yeah, even Make It So went out. So at least I think it did. It started charging and now it's gone.
Hey, nice thing about us is we're still here and we can still continue on with the mission.
That's right. We got to. So how do we stand?
Until we find us another android to replace the one we lost.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, we'll never do that. We'll never do that. But anyway, so at the beginning of the season, James, I took a guess at what our season ratings would be. I thought yours would be close to a 5, mine would be close to a 4, and our guess would be a 4. But boy, was I sure wrong. 26 episodes. Apparently, I hate Star Trek. I really hate Star Trek. Mine averaged a 3.68 out of 5.
That's maybe a 4. Yeah. Maybe a 4.
Right. Yours, on the other hand, averaged a 3.81, so you like Star Trek a little better.
Hang on, I'm not above a 4 average. That sounds wrong.
Yep, no, all these points here. 5, 4, 5, 3, 4, 2, 4, 5, 2, 2, 5, 5, 4, 4, 5, 2, 4, 4, 5. I'm not doing, locking out the computer, by the way. But no, it all comes up to 99 points divided by 26 is...
Did I give a 1 this year?
Not at all.
I don't think that any deserved it.
Your 2s went to Legacy.
Yeah.
Final Mission, The Loss.
What, really? Okay, now I'm feeling bad.
Galaxy's Child.
But that has the... What's it? That has the holodeck Leah Brahms, and surely I loved that one.
No, you didn't, because I think I was on for that one.
No, that was Kieran McDuff that was on for Galaxy's Child. Let's see, you have 2s for Half a Life and The Host. So yeah, you came out to 99 points total. Divided by 26 episodes is 3.81.
Yep, said less than 4.
So how'd the guests do, Lou?
For the 4th season in the row, the guests actually like Star Trek. They love Star Trek.
What was that total?
103 points for a total of 3.96. Now, I think that's skewed, if you think about it, because we do every episode, James, whereas those guests come on for those episodes that they like. So they're going to give it a higher score.
That's true too. I could agree with your assessment on that, Lou. Because even today, I gave a half a point difference between you two coming on, and I'm a Klingon expert. So yeah, I'm liable to be more partial. But when I came in on Drumhead, I wasn't an expert. I was just. This me was a Star Trek fan. I think I gave that a 3.5?
4.
4? Yeah. Sissy.
And Data gave it a 5.
So it just depends on what episode it is and who's actually the guest on. Like for me, yeah, you're going to get a little bit higher score when I come on for the Klingon episodes. But again, I gave an honest opinion on Drumhead too. So. It just depends on who your expert is.
Yep. So that brings...
Or your guest.
Yep. That calls an end to season 4. So we are officially almost... Well, we're past half of our run.
Gee, I end season 4 and get to start season 5.
Yeah. I figure by the time we're done with this series, might be the year 2020. But we'll see. I did tell James that I did apply for a surveillance position at the casino. And if I get that, it'd probably be overnights. And if I do get overnights, and I think our life can return back to normal to Saturdays or Fridays, and we could get back on a better track. So,
well, Saturdays would be better for me.
Oh, definitely. It's better for all of us. But right now, Saturdays, because of the fact that, I don't know why we couldn't do it earlier, James. I guess the only thing is you've got the whippers running around the house.
I do indeed.
So.
Hey.
Did I say that right? Or are they nippers? Whippers or nippers?
Nippers. No, nippers.
Nippers. Okay.
Well, you can always put the nippers in a room and seal it off for an hour. Put a video cam in there to make sure they're not killing themselves.
What's the problem? He'd have to run in there all the time. You boys, stop it. You get off your sister. Okay. So anyway.
Or better yet. Now look here, girl. You can't be beating up the boys like
this. Yeah, no kidding.
Because you're the only girl in the room.
Yes, no kidding.
I don't know how you kids are, Doc, so I'm just guessing.
Okay. So I believe we started this season in March, and as we ended this in March... We suck. Anyway...
I think that's pretty good. How many episodes was in that season?
26.
26, and you got it done in less than a month. I'd say that's pretty damn good, Lou. You did it starting the 1st of March, and you're ending it towards the end of March. I'd say you're doing pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, no, I think he misunderstood there, James. We started March of last year.
March of last year. Okay.
Yeah. We were supposed to be already headlong into season 5 by now, but anyway. So, Brian, you're going to join us next time for Redemption?
Yes, I will be here for Redemption 2.
All right.
Someone's got to keep you damn Ferengis and humans in line.
Definitely.
It's obvious you don't know Klingon politics well.
No. And in the meantime, we will be doing our Star Trek 3, the Search for Spock review. So, it's no longer a surprise. They know we're doing them. So, hey, do you remember, were you on, Brian, with when we interviewed Natalia Nugalich?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am trying to get her on for a couple of the episodes that she's in. Of course, that's in season 6 and 7. But, yeah, I've already sent her a friend request on Skype. I want to see what she'll say.
I used to have her agent's information. I'll see if I can drag it out of my desk.
Oh, you don't need to. I've got her personal email.
I've got her personal email too, but she'll run everything through her business manager.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So it's each. You'll get a faster response from her if you send it through her business manager.
Okay. Yeah, do that then. All right, everybody. So join us next time as we... Which, I don't know what's going to come first, the voyage home.
Avoid the planet Earth at all costs. We are under the attack of an orbiting probe.
Notify all stations. Starfleet emergency, red alert.
Earth is on the edge of destruction.
We cannot survive unless a way can be found to respond to the probe.
The key to saving the future.
Spock, you're talking about the end of every life on Earth.
Can be found only in the past.
We're going to attempt time travel.
Sulu, take us home.
These are the voyages of the crew of the Starship Enterprise.
Judging by the pollution content of the atmosphere, I believe we have arrived at the latter half of the 20th century.
Stardate 1986.
San Francisco.
Our own world is waiting for us to save it.
They have 24 hours.
Everybody remember where we parked. Break up.
To complete their mission.
It looked like a cadet review.
We will beam in tonight, collect the photons, and beam out.
I want you all to be very careful.
Without being discovered.
We have an intruder.
All right, who are you?
You're not exactly catching us at our best.
That much is certain.
This is an extremely primitive and paranoid culture.
What does it mean, exact change?
Many of their customs will doubtless take us by surprise.
We're ready for beam out.
My transporter power is down to minimal. I've got to bring in one at a time.
You're from outer space.
No, I'm from Iowa. I only work in outer space. Let's do our job and get out of here.
Freeze! Tekov, can you hear me? Freeze!
stop us, the 23rd century.
Full power now, sir.
Shields at maximum.
Steady.
Hold on tight, lassie.
Can we make breakaway speed?
That's all I can give you!
Book 8.
Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Or Redemption Part 2.
A Klingon Empire faces extinction.
It is a time to celebrate, for tomorrow we all may die.
Data must decide who will live and who will die.
You don't give a damn about the people whose lives you're throwing away. We're not just machine fire.
And will Picard's past finally catch up with him?
Tasha.
Find out the chilling answers on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Well, just join us next time for something and you'll be surprised. Hey, Brian, thanks for coming on, buddy.
Hey, it's a pleasure to come on and educate you poor non-Klingons on what it is to be Klingon.
That's right. That's right.
You want to hear the punchline to all this? You ready? I'm not being a Klingon anymore.
I know. Yeah, I've already seen you in your Bajoran outfit.
Nope, I haven't got the Bajoran outfit.
But I have seen you in a Bajoran outfit. Or no, at least I've, dressed as a Bajoran.
Nope, I have never been dressed as a Bajoran yet. I traded my Klingon, my, you know, that Imperial Klingon uniform that's movie quality that I worked my butt off so hard to get. I traded it for a vehicle.
Really?
I don't own Ridges anymore. I don't own an Imperial Klingon uniform anymore. I barely have enough of a uniform to put together to be a classic Klingon.
Oh, wow. All
right. I've even quit all my Klingon organizations.
Fascinating. Okay, guys, we need to go. It's midnight. Well, at least somewhere it's midnight.
So, Lou, that Bajoran uniform you thought you saw, that was just Brian in his pajamas, right?
Must have been.
Probably.
Must have been. Yeah, okay.
I'm actually, you ever heard of Gundam?
No.
You guys have never heard of Gundam Wing?
Oh, okay, sure. The anime.
Yeah, that's what I am now. I'm a mecha pilot.
Ah, I see.
Okay, that's what you are?
Yep, that's what I do now. I'm a mecha pilot.
Good enough. All right, guys. So, everyone, join us next time for whatever comes your way. And take care, and good night.
Kapla.
Good night, everyone.
You know, James, you ought to have your own outgoing thing, like a computer transfer EMH to the, I don't know, because you're the doctor. You know,
yeah, maybe at this point, I'm going to try to transfer EMH up to the bedroom.
Yeah. All right. We'll see ya.
Night, Doc.
Good night.
Okay. See you guys. See you next week.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Lou, you going to stay on for a couple minutes and talk the BS we need to talk about?
Oh, I can't. I got to get upstairs. My daughter's sicker than sick and my wife wants food.
Well, your wife's easy. She can get off her ass and put something in the pot yourself, and then you can finish it up when you get back.
Nah! Only I can cook polpetti. So, no, I can't. But, yeah, we do eventually.
Yeah, I need to sit down with you. I'm not available Sunday because I got to go up to my granddaughter's birthday party. She's turning 2.
Okay.
But I'm free Saturday.
For
sit down about talking about this live streaming thing for
okay, no, obviously I'm not available Saturday. Well,
hey, I do 2 in the morning just as easily as I do 2 in the afternoon on a Saturday.
Yeah, no, because I need to figure out what's the best approach for it, and I can't do it in 2 days.
Well, just to let you know our old boys El Troubadour?
Yeah.
They finally signed. They're playing at the Region Summit. For free.
Oh, really?
Yep, they're doing it as a favor to their number one groupie.
Oh, wow.
It's nice to have a band in your back pocket.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is pretty cool.
I just got confirmation today from Robert Scott, and he's definitely going to, him and John going to come up and play at my region summit.
Hmm. Sounds good. All right. Anyway, I got to get up there.
Okay, go to bed.
Exactly, my point.
Go feed the heathens. We'll talk with you later, bro.